Gittin, Perikei, Mishnah Tes, 5, 9, the last of the Perik, and the last of the various Takanos we have here in these chapters. These Takanos, of course, again, are for Darchei Shalom, for the sake of promoting peace between a man and his fellow. And this Mishnah actually is a repeat of a Mishnah we saw back in Maseches Shvius, and therefore it discusses topics that are related to the Shemitah year. But the main picture here really, the main issue here is what's called the Siyul Dvar Avera, which means literally helping someone to do some kind of sin. So let me make sure the big picture is clear. There's an Isser D'Orais in the Torah called Lifnei Iver Lo Siten Mechshol. You may not put a stumbling block in front of the blind, which Chazal understand to be understood also metaphorically, that to cause someone to do an Avera, or even to help them do an Avera, is forbidden by the Torah. And to the extent that we're talking about an Isra D'Oraisa of Lifnei Iver, so there would be no possibility of the rabbis being a takana, allowing people to do it for the sake of peace. So we have to understand that there's a difference between Lifnei Iver and Siyula Dvar Avera. And the difference basically is as follows. If it's the something where the sinner and the person who's assisting him need to work in tandem, and without the assistant, the sinner wouldn't be able to do his sin at all. So then that's called Lifnei Iver. In other words, you're basically, without you helping him, he just wouldn't do the sin. So therefore, you're jointly responsible and you can't do it. On the other hand, if we're talking about something which a person could do on his own one way or another, he doesn't need you to do it. It's just that you're helping, making it, I'll call it, making it easier for him. So then we're going to see in our Mishnah that we have some, that's also forbidden, midor rabbanan, still forbidden, but only on a rabbinic level. And therefore, we're going to have leniency where the person who's doing the aiding of the person who's doing a sin we're talking about a rabbinic topic here, and as long as the person's not getting his hands dirty with the actual implementation of the Avera, so then it's going to be permitted in scenarios where the alternative is worse, which is a lack of shalom between a man and his fellow. That's the principle of our Mishnah here, according to the Bar Tanura and according to many Rishonim. So here's the Mishnah inside, the first part of it. It says, Mash'elas isha l'chaverta ha'chashuda ala shvias nafa u'chavara v'rechayim v'tanur. A woman may lend to her friend, even if that friend is suspected to be someone who flouts the halachas of shvias, the Shemitah year. She can lend her various tools used to make bread, like sifters and mills and ovens and so on. Now, the case here, the issue is as follows. There's an Isser from the Torah that when it comes to Shemitah produce, a person is indeed permitted to make use of stuff that grew, which is all ownerless, so no one has personal ownership, special proprietary ownership over the over produce that grows. Whatever does grow, people can partake in, under certain circumstances. But if you bring, let's say wheat, so you bring wheat into your house, okay? Now, that wheat that you brought into your house, once it's no longer available outside to the general public and the animals would be foraging for food, so then you can't keep it in your house either. It reaches a time called Zman Bior, the time for getting rid of that particular type of food, and the Zman for Bior, the time for that removal from your house, varies from type of produce to private type of produce, depending on when it stops being available to the animals, and the wild outside. But when that time of beer arrives, a person is required to take the produce out of his house and declare it ownerless, being mafkaret, so that people can get it, the animals can get it, and so on. If a person then turns around and reacquires it and brings it to his house, that's permitted, but he has to first take it out and be mafkaret, render it ownerless. And if a person fails to do that, he didn't do the mitzvah of beer, and therefore the food that stayed in his house now has become forbidden to him, and the food is asr b'achila. You can't eat it. So now that being the case, if you suspect your neighbor of not caring about the halachas of Shemitah or not following the halachas of Shemitah, so then once the time of beer has passed, let's say for wheat, so then whatever bread she's going to make from wheat that grew in the Shemitah year will be forbidden, okay, because it really had to go through beer, had to be removed from her house, and it wasn't, okay? The question is now, you think that's the situation. So you have been asked to lend your neighbor, a sifter for her flour. The flour is forbidden and she's going to make forbidden bread and eat it. Are you allowed to lend her the sifter. So the Mishnah's point here is, yes, you may. Some unfortunate folks in the fact that it says lechaver to her friend, and we understand this is like someone who she has a pre-existing relationship with, like her neighbor or something, where, if she didn't lend it, then there'd be ongoing animosity that would be created by it. So here, we don't want the one neighbor to resent and fight with the other neighbor, and therefore, we let the neighbor who keeps Shemitah lend her sifter to her neighbor who she suspects doesn't keep Shemitah. Now, the reason why that's permitted is because one or another, this, even if she can't, sift her flour, okay, so she'll eat whole wheat flour or something like that. So it's not an essential thing that without this, she would not go hungry. She wouldn't go hungry. She'd still find a way to make bread. Just without the help of the neighbor. And therefore, since we're talking about only siyul ledavar avera and not actually, she wasn't, the lender wasn't necessary for the woman to eat forbidden bread. And also the woman is not getting involved directly with, making the bread or feeding of the bread. So therefore, we're going to say in such a scenario where the alternative is much worse of a lack of shalom, so the neighbor is allowed to lend her sifter to her neighbor. The four different implements we're talking about here are a nafa, which is used to sift flour, a kavara, which is used to sort like the grains themselves, like little kernels of grain from, let's say, rocks and so on. A rechaim, which is a hand mill for grinding up the wheat grains, and the tanur is the like a kind of a portable oven that's used for cooking, baking the bread. So lending it is okay because you're talking about the rabbanan and not getting your hands dirty and actually doing activities with it. Avalo savor velo sitchan ima, but the neighbor may not actually do the sifting or the grinding of the wheat because then she's sort of with her own hands facilitating this to happen, and that's too much. She cannot do that. Okay, that's the first part of our Mishnah. That's how I think the Bar Tanora learned it, and many Rishonim, and I think it's like a conceptual framework which would apply, to cases easily outside of this Mishnah. And the most important place where you'd apply this principle is the all important Shalom bias to have good relationships between spouses. So there, basically, for the sake of promoting and ensuring shalom bias, a person should be makel even on any derabanan for sure, not a doraisa. So the kind of same principle kind of is applying. Now, all that said, the Yerushalmi learned the Mishnah a little differently, and many mafarshim speak out like the Yerushalmi. So this is like a different approach and a much less abstract conceptual approach. The idea is that, much more simply, if your neighbor is asking to borrow, this hand mill to grind something, so you might be thinking, oh, she's using it to grind wheat, which would be forbidden because it's Shemitah year and that it's passed them on Bior. But you know what? She could be also using it to, she wants to grind up, some cinnamon sticks or something. So the point is, there are other permitted uses, and since it's kind of like a dual-purpose item, you're allowed to lend it out. That's how the Yerushalmi approaches it much more, straightforwardly. Okay. In any case, I like the much more conceptual framework, and we continue on with that. I think it's the Bar Tanora learns. Further, with the next case here, which is also lending, but here we're moving away from Shemitah. There's not a Shemitah issue, really. This is an issue of, really a twofold issue of taking tithes and also conveying Tumah. Okay, so although the terms Chaver and Am Haaretz literally mean a Chaver is like a guy in the inn club, so like a Talmud Chacham, and an Am Haaretz means like a simple man of the earth, a simple person, so notwithstanding, they've become kind of terms of art which refer to people who are a chaver, someone who's strict about two areas of halacha specifically. He's taken like a formal commitment to, number one, tithe all the produce that passes through his hands. That's a din de rabbanan. That's related to the halachas of demai, because the rabbis saw in the time of the Mishnah that while most people do tithe their produce properly, a significant minority do not. And the rabbi said, although mid to oraisa, you could therefore rely on the food supply as being kosher because you can go after the majority, since there's such a significant minority who don't tithe properly, specifically regarding the Trumas Meister, that like the 10th percent of the 10th, the 10th of the 10th that is supposed to be separated by a Levi to give to a Kohen. They don't separate that out like the rest of their tithe, but that piece, that 1% is highly problematic. So therefore, the rabbi said, people have to be careful whenever they get produce from a non-chaver, meaning Am Haaretz, they have to then essentially, out of doubt, retake tithes, particularly the getting the Trumas Meiser as well as the Meiser Sheni out of the mix. Okay, so that's a Dinder Rabbanan. Why is it derabanan again? Because midoraisa, you can assume the food is kosher. That's the one thing the chaver takes responsibility to do. Everything he passed through his hands, he tithes properly. The other thing that the chaver does is that he treats all foodstuffs and utensils in his house to ensure that they remain tahor. So even though there's actually no prohibition at all to allow regular food to become tame, and no problem to eat regular food in a state of tuma, that's not a problem. But people who are chaverim, they talk about themselves to be more strict, and they don't do that. They keep things, they keep their utensils and their food all tahor. Now, while there's no problem with regular chulin becoming tame, regular chulin, like let's say we'll talk about wheat here, if we make bread, so once you take the wheat, even if the wheat is chulin, it's already been fully tithed, right? It's besukan, but you turn it into dough, so at that point there's a new obligation that kicks in, the obligation to separate chala, hafreshes chala, to give to a kohen, and that has a status like truma, it can't become tummy. Okay? So there you've got now an issue, and this really is a serious issue, right? You can't allow lechatchila, you're not allowed to let chala become tummy if you can help it. In other words, we can't help it, but a chaver makes sure he doesn't do that. Okay? So now, the case here is Eishes Chaver Mash'eles Le'eishes Am Ha'aretz. You have one neighbor is a Chaver family, and they're strict about both tithing and Tumah Tahara, and the other neighbor wants to borrow something is an Am Ha'aretz, so they're not strict about tithing, and they're not careful about Tumah Tahara. So the Mishnah says that the family that's more strict may lend to the family that's less strict. The Mishnah says a Nafa Uchavara, like different kinds of sifters, but the truth is that it would equally be applicable to lending the mill or the oven, rechaim and tanor. And more than that, says the Mishnah, uvoreres v'tochenes umrakedes ima. The chaver family neighbor is actually the wife who's from that family who lends the utensils, can actually participate with her neighbor and help her in doing the sifting and the grinding and the grain. Okay, now, why is that? Because to sift or grind the grain, what are you doing already? There's no midoraisa, there's no problem here of tithing happening, of being required, because it's only an obligation of midorabon. And there's no issue of tumantar here, because A, the grain never got wet, so it's not susceptible to tumah, and B, even if it did become tummy, so what? That's not the end of the world to make chulin tummy. However, says the Mishnah, aval mishatatil hamayim. Once the neighbor who's an amaretz pours the water into the flour, so now either then or soon thereafter, once you start mixing and agitating the water and flour together to make it into dough, there's an obligation that kicks in of separating challah, and therefore at that point you can't make a tummy anymore because it's challah. They can't become tamei lechachila. So therefore, it says the Mishnah, lo siga ima, so then hands off, the strict chaver woman should not touch the dough with the amaretz woman, lest she make it tamei and have her hands part of that avera. Levi she'ein machzike yedei over avera. Because you can assist and participate with someone doing over avera, even if the truth is, even if it's not going to be her hands that are doing it, and even if her hands are tahor and so on, but to participate with a non-Jew actively is not, with the not from neighbors actively is not appropriate. Mephoshim speak out, by the way, that after the dough has been made, let's say now the Amaretz neighbor asks her chaver friend to say, let's say, knead the challahs, braid the challahs. So since the challah already became tummy and the hafreshes challah became tummy already, so then to braid the bread, loaves, is not making anything worse, and therefore she the chaver wife actually could participate in the braiding of the loaves of the bread. That would be acceptable because no avera happening anymore. Now the Mishnah wraps up by saying like a new point here. Sorry, first says v'chulan lo amru el mepnei darchei shalom. The reason for these enactments were for the sake of promoting peace, and therefore some make a diuk that if it's a situation where for whatever reason not lending the utensil wouldn't in any way cause further friction and animosity, it would not be allowed because you are assisting, which is someone doing avera, and siyud l'dvar avera is an isra d'rabbanan. Okay, fine. The last part of the Mishnah here is now something else. It says, "Machzikim yedei goyim b'shvias." You're allowed to encourage, literally strengthen the hands, to encourage Gentiles on Shvias, meaning you see a Gentile who's plowing his field in Eretz Yisrael in the Shemitah year. So are you allowed to say, hatzlacha, I hope it works out okay? The answer is, yes, you can. Why? Because what's the Gentile doing? He's not mitzvah. He has no obligation to keep Shemitah. Even if you hold that there's no kinyan of the goyim to be mafkia the land, and the land is obligated, and even if you hold that the obligation is on the land itself as opposed to a Jew, but still, this Gentile is a Gentile. He's not obligated in the Torah mitzvahs. So the fact that he's plowing land that shouldn't be plowed by a Jew or shouldn't be plowed, he's not doing anything wrong. Therefore, you can tell him, God bless. You can tell him, Shalom Aleichem. That's all going to be okay. Avolo Yedei Yisrael, you can't do that for a Jew, however. So either there's no great chiddush here, because how in the world could we think you're allowed to encourage a Jew to do an Avera, and say, good job. But the Rambam in the Parish understands that there are certain times when, because the alternative was, potentially starving, that Jews were allowed to work the land in the Shemitah year. And when that's the case, maybe you have to do that, but you certainly don't give verbal encouragement. So the point of our mission is verbal encouragement is okay for Gentiles, but not even for Jews. And if you're not participating, verbally encouraging a Jew to do an aveira would be not good. And even if it's mutter for the Jew to do technically, if it's only a bidyevet situation, you still shouldn't encourage him. So something like, if a person has to eat on Yom Kippur because there's a suffix pekuach nefesh, his doctor said, it's dangerous if he doesn't eat, so he's eating. So it's not appropriate to tell that Jew who's eating on Yom Kippur, beheter, he's allowed to tell him, batei avon. No, we don't encourage it. That's not appropriate. Not appropriate. Okay, that's the Rambam Perish Mishnayos learns. Now, finally, v'sho'alim b'shloman, you're allowed to greet a non-Jew, even on their, idolatrous holiday. You'll have to greet them, and you can say shalom aleichem to them, wish them well, wish them, even use the word shalom, which is Hashem's name, giving them bracha. That's okay. Mipnei darchei shalom, for the sake of peace. Rashi speaks out, why in the world not? What do you want? What will be the problem? So the problem is, for all you know, he's now going to go back to his temple, idolatrous temple, his church, whatever it is, and, thank his God for getting a blessing from a Jew or something, so then you've sort of facilitated that happening, precipitated it happening. But it's not a problem. If you're talking about verbal encouragement or verbal greeting, you're allowed to, even on their holidays, and certainly not on their holidays, you're allowed to. And in fact, the Gemara tells the famous story of Rabbi Yochanan, who was, no one ever said hello to him first. He always said hello to everybody. Afilu Nachri Shabashuk. We're talking about Jews and Gentiles alike. So a person should make his effort to greet non-Jews, on good terms with them, Mipnei Darchei Shalom, for the sake of promoting peaceful relations between Jew and non-Jew, which is certainly a value all to itself, and one that the rabbis here are encouraging. And with that, we finish the fifth perek and the Takanos of Gittin, and now we go on to the sixth perek, returning to the main topic of Gittin itself.